everybody. My name is Dave Wilson, and if you can hear the sound of my voice and all this stuff works, once again, we're about to embark on an adventure that I call Dave Wilson's part of Radio Liberty. Yes, Dr. Stan is away from the microphone for a couple of more days, and I've been privileged to sit in here for him, bringing you some of those guests that you like to hear, and we all know has a lot of good information, and today is probably one of the epitomes of my broadcasting experience. I love to talk with our guests today, and I'll introduce him to you in just a minute. But I have to remind you, of course, that the views expressed on this live radio program are my views, the views of my guests, and they don't necessarily reflect the views of the station that you're listening to or the internet provider, yada, yada. You understand all about that. And, of course, it's an interactive program. Not only do we have a guest who is very well qualified to talk about what we're going to talk about, but we'd also like to invite you to be our guest as well at the bottom of the hour or whenever you feel that you have a comment or question that you'd like to chime in here. 464-8295 is the number to call in the Central California Coast area, or otherwise we'll pay for the call at 888-245-4237. That's 888-24-LIBERTY. Let me read something just briefly here from the Declaration of the 13 United States of America. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their creators with certain inalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. Later on, they went to write the Constitution of the United States, where they said that we, the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare, and secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, do ordain and establish this Constitution for the United States of America. These are the documents, the latter in particular, that our elected officials swear upon oath to protect and defend. Today we're going to be talking a little bit about what some people in our government who have taken an oath to defend the Constitution of the United States may be straying a little bit from that. We're going to be talking with Henry Lamb. Henry, are you there?
Yes, sir.
How are you this afternoon?
Yes, super.
I am super as well and very excited. I haven't talked to you for several years here, and I know lots of things have happened. I've been reading on your website, freedom.org, about various kinds of things that you are commenting on, and I couldn't wait for Dr. Stan to allow me to have another program to do here so that I could call you up, and you were most gracious to spend an hour of your time with us here, and I thank you for that in advance.
Well, it's my pleasure, Dave.
The thing that I like about what you do, Henry, is that you seem to be able to follow a lot of the threads along that people don't seem to notice or not getting published in the media, and bring them together to show us this whole finished web of intrigue that is all over the countryside now. It's not only here in the United States, but it's all around the world. Today, another thread of that web, it has to be thought about, and that's what's coming up in this election year. We're hearing more and more about it on the news. You know, the Democrats have these 10 people that go around having meetings and debates, about the issues and so forth. And as we approach this year, 2004, let you and I talk a little bit about what your perception is of what the important things that are going to happen in 2004 that people need to be aware of.
Well, you're right in recognizing the importance of this election year. You know, I said back 4 years ago that the election of 2000 was a turning point, or could be a turning point, in the history of this country.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the closest election in the history of our country. And fortunately, from my point of view, the direction tipped in the right way. Now, we have another critical election coming, and there are those who were disappointed in 2000 whose entire life is devoted to getting Mr. Bush out of the White House, and then there are those of us who want nothing more than to avoid a repeat of the previous administration.
Mm-hmm.
So we really do have a critical election year ahead. I've been around for a long, long time, Dave, and I have never seen a period where the country was divided and divided so intensely?
The idea of our country being divided is becoming more and more apparent. But you know one thing, Henry, that I'm not sure whether I should be surprised at it or not, but the passion and the rage of the other side, that is the progressive, socialist, democratic side, is much stronger than I've ever seen it before. They are really mad as all get out, aren't they?
Oh, absolutely. But you know, the division is good in this country. There should be identifiable different visions for the future. It is out of the conflict of those ideas and the open and public and civil debate that the best of the ideas emerge. But when the debate degenerates to nothing more than personal rage that is baseless, that has no rationality in public policy, then it's very serious.
It is indeed, and we saw some of that locally here in Santa Cruz. You know, Santa Cruz is not known for its conservative values necessarily, although there is a huge base of conservative people who live here, and then there's a huge base of very, very liberal, quote, progressive, unquote, people, and not very many people in the middle. But anyway, my point was this: to point out this rage is one of the places up there at UC Santa Cruz, one of the girls came out as a Republican. She was trying to form a Young Republicans group. She set up her card table and all this other stuff like they do. You know, everybody else does this kind of thing. And it wasn't a day, I think maybe 48 hours at the most, that her room was trashed and all kinds of things had happened to her personal belongings. Her name had been denigrated and everything else publicly up there on the university. And this sort of thing is what happens when a person decides to talk about his conservative values.
Sure.
Here in Santa Cruz, and it's happening all over the country.
Well, it's, you know, it is interesting to me that when someone comes out with a statement about affirmative action or about immigration policy, the progressives or the other side are the first to stand up and scream hate speech. But whenever it comes to a conservative wanting to start a conservative club on campus or saying something positive about the present administration, it is the progressives that run TV ads comparing Bush with Hitler. You know, it is, they have no reluctance at all to engage in vicious hate speech and yet condemn Republicans whenever they say something like affirmative action.
Well, you know, it's okay to do as I do, but don't you dare come up with any new ideas as long as we're living in a world of consensus and diversity and all that. You can be diverse as long as you're just like me.
But you know what, Dave? I think the majority of the American people are growing weary of this hate, of this rage, of this baseless accusation. I see, on the one hand, people that I know who have been traditionally on the other side of the policy fence from me, backing away from much of what is going on in the Democratic debates, the campaigns. They're backing away from much of the demonstrations and the viciousness that is coming from the other side. And at the same time, I am seeing a resurgence of the conservative thinking people getting involved in a variety of organizations, getting involved in government, very much like the Freedom 21 Santa Cruz campaign.
Mm-hmm.
And that's happening across the country.
I think that conservatives have all too long now been without any kind of passion for whatever reason. I don't understand it. I never have understood it. Why we as conservative people holding the truths that we know to be valid in this country, that is the benefits of capitalism and private property ownership and so forth and so on, why we don't have more passion about telling people about it and defending our position. What do you think?
Well, I think most of us have been and are preoccupied with earning a living, with going about our business, leaving to those elected officials that are in office the task of guarding our constitutional freedoms.
Mm-hmm.
Understanding that there's bickering back and forth, But overall, very fundamental principles like the free enterprise system and capitalism, for example, has never been seriously threatened until now. And when we look at those fundamental freedoms being taken from us incrementally, we are beginning to get some passion about it. We are recognizing that indeed it is serious, and that if we don't stand up and take back this country and firmly plant the direction of this country on the principles of the Constitution, we will lose it.
Yeah, there's a lot of truth to that, unfortunately, and I'm glad to see that you've observed a resurgence of this passion, because I'm seeing it also, and I think the internet is helping to some degree, perhaps to a very large degree. The country is becoming computer savvy, and I think there are computers in, what, 70% of the households now, and people are using the computer for alternate news sources, places like WorldNet Daily, or even reading the actual Telegraph from Great Britain and the English language Saudi papers and so forth is something that we've never been able to do before, and we're not a dumb people generally here in these United States, even though all of us don't have multiple degrees and so forth and so on. We have a certain pugnacious attitude that when things begin to slip away, we're going to start grasping at them, and I think that's what made this country great.
Oh, absolutely. And I am convinced that ultimately the principles of freedom will prevail. We may go through periods of oppression, but once the flame is out of the bottle, and once the fires of freedom have begun to burn, they can never be extinguished.
Exactly. And that's, of course, what happened way back in the 18th century, and has happened again and again in the history of our country, irrespective of the leadership that we have in the individual man, whether he's aligned with the dark side or the light side or whatever sort of conspiratorial nature you may think is going on there. The people of these United States, when called upon to defend themselves and defend their way of life, have always come through. And, you know, ladies and gentlemen, as we talk with Henry Lamb this afternoon, I want to be sure to get out his website and the information about him. First of all, the website is freedom.org, and you can access all kinds of fascinating material there. And there's an opportunity there also for you to become a member of his organization by your contribution, and then an entire world of information can open up to you via the internet. I recommend it to you highly, going to www.freedom.org and looking around, seeing the latest that's going on. Also, there is an in-print magazine now called The Ecologic Powerhouse. And by the way, Henry, congratulations on that magazine. It's shown wonderful improvement over the last year, so it's great.
Well, we have been working on it. It is a magnificent magazine, and we're delighted to give people a free sample copy.
Perfect.
And it's just a toll-free phone call, and we'll put a current issue in everybody's mailbox.
Now, that would be 877-847-3443?
That's correct.
Okay, we'll say that often here during the program,
okay.
But Dr. Stan's going to get mad with me if I don't tell him our toll-free number, which is 800-544-8927. Get a piece of paper and a pencil, ladies and gentlemen. Start writing all this stuff down, because we've got some fantastic deals for you on this Thursday afternoon edition of Radio Liberty. Dr. Stan's going to be back next week. He's traveling about, not too much, but some. And we'll be back here as the Lord tarries on Monday. Don't forget to give that number a call, 800-544-8927, and ask for a copy of the Radio Liberty Resource Package. And we'll send you a copy of the resource list, which is about 80 pages or so now of all kinds of stuff that you can avail yourself to learn about what part of the battle, that is the battle to save America, is yours. God empowers each and every one of us with some part of that battle, so why don't you be sure to call 800-544-8927. We'll be right back.
Well, if there's any one tape that you should hear, it's my talk on geopolitics, an untold story that is vitally important if America is to survive as a free nation. It goes into the background of the forces that have created the wars of the 20th century, the World War, the First World War, the Second World War, Korea, Vietnam. We go into the ideological and the spiritual battle behind the forces that have moved America from crisis to crisis and are currently undermining the very fabric of our society. That number again, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, and the tape, Geopolitics. It is vitally important that you help us to get this message out across America, because without knowledge, my people perish. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR for copies of my talk on geopolitics.
We're back for the second segment of this edition of Radio Liberty. My name is Dave Wilson, and with us on the phone is Mr. Henry Lamb. We're talking about this year, the past year, and the things that we need to know in order to make this coming year a continuation of what we've set in motion here in these United States. Henry, you say that the central theme in the 2004 election is going to be Iraq. Is that working itself out in the debates that you see around?
Well, yes, and it will continue to do so. There is no way that anything else short of another major attack on our soil will replace Iraq and the war on terrorism as the central theme of the election this year. There will be other peripheral issues, but as you are aware, the Democrats are jumping up and down on criticizing every facet of the Iraq campaign.
It didn't start out that way, did it?
No, it did not.
And there's been a not so subtle shift as the election comes closer. Some of this rage and panic kick in, I think, frankly, that formal politeness in terms of talking about President Bush's role in all this is cast aside, and it's politics as usual in many respects.
Yes. Well, a lot of that you can just write off to election year rhetoric. But this year, it is deeper than normal, and the consequences are far more important than normal. Because what is happening in Iraq is a precedent that will direct the future of the Middle East and our relationship to the terrorists in this world. And it is absolutely crucial that we maintain a steadfast and determined program in Iraq.
Some of the people have noticed that the Democrats, generally speaking, and Howard Dean in particular, just want to say, okay, we're going to take our guns and go home and let you guys get your own company or your country turned around and get your infrastructure started, and we're out of here. We did what we came to do, and we're out of here. What's wrong with that picture?
Well, there's an awful lot wrong with that picture. In the first instance, and perhaps the most serious thing that is wrong with it, the moment that we fold in the face of adversity against terrorism, we will embolden the terrorists. We will prove them right, and I'm talking particularly about Bin Laden, whose philosophy is, if you deliver enough body bags, the American people will get sick of it and go home. And Iraq will turn into a new Afghanistan and a new harbor for terrorists.
Hmm. The idea of a democratic society coming forth in Iraq is a difficult one for me to understand, because since time immemorial, they've been plagued with this idea of tribalism and warlords and everything. Do you really think it's possible for us to instruct them in the principles of democracy?
If you noticed in my article, I referred to the program there, creating a representative government. I am exceedingly reluctant to put any tighter description on it than that, for the very reasons that you discuss. There is no history, no culture of democracy there. It has forever been a nation that has been ruled by the strongest warlord. And what we have to do is teach these folks that there is a way to manage government in a representative fashion. It will not look like the United States.
Right.
It will not look like the Parliament in England, nor should it necessarily. But if the principles that are enshrined in our Constitution are implanted in Iraq, and that being the most important one that you read in the preamble, that and in the declaration from the Declaration of Independence, that government is empowered by the consent of the people. If that principle is implanted there, whatever form the initial government takes will be better than anything they've ever had before.
And people are beginning to realize a little bit about that, if you believe what you hear on the alternative media sometimes. I just listened to a tape from John Loeffler, whom I'm sure you know. He had an individual who was a Nazareth, a person born in Nazareth, whose home had been taken away from him in 1948 and so forth. But the point is, he still speaks Arabic. He just got back from Iraq and Baghdad and observed a lot of seeds being planted and small shoots coming up of capitalism.
Oh, yes.
And that was great, because that's going to help people understand that their own self-sufficiency is what's going to get them through this.
Well, they're seeing not only the benefits of entrepreneurship, and although it may be in very small ways, it is still something that they've never been able to experience before.
Mm-hmm.
As they see the benefits of a free press, there are hundreds of newspapers throughout Iraq now that were never possible before. As they see the benefits that come from having this council that they have put together to discuss across the table, rather than to gang up in their tribal wars, they are experiencing new things there. It will take years and stages of evolution for them to develop a kind of a stable, self-governing institution there, but it's coming. It has to start somewhere. And thank the Lord for George Bush, who had the backbone and character to realize that that is ultimately the only solution to the terrorism problem, to the fundamental Islamist problem, and he has taken the first step.
And there are those who, of course, are saying, no, that wasn't right. The UN should have come in, and we should have waited for the UN, and now we should give everything to the UN, and particularly give them our money. And we're going to be talking about that as we come back from our break at the bottom of the hour here. As I was saying 10 minutes ago or so, if you call 800-544-8927 and ask for a copy of that Radio Liberty resource packet, you'll receive not only the 80-some-odd page catalog of videos and books and cassettes and other kinds of things that Dr. Stan and his associates have put together here for your edification and education. There's also a list in there of all the different places where Dr. Stan's program, Radio Liberty, is aired. I mean, that's 2-3 pages worth of places now. And I guess what I'm getting around to is that it's very, very important for you to decide sooner or later that you're going to stand shoulder to shoulder with Dr. Stan and others who have decided to underwrite the cost of some of this radio programming. You can make a pledge at that same number, 800-544-8927, with your credit card. And I have to remind you, of course, that it's not a 501c3 organization we have here, and donations are not tax deductible. We wouldn't want it to be that way so that we can speak freely about all the different things that we do. But nevertheless, for your decision to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters, we'll send you the 4 very best tapes of the month. We'll send you Dr. Stan's newsletter, all for $20, and I want to underline the word and or more, because it's so important that you support us. Dr. Stan looks forward to hearing from you. 800-544-8927 is the number to call right now with that vote of support in terms of your money. And we'll be back in just a minute.
Our 4 tape set on the JFK assassination includes an interview with Lee Harvey Oswald. Of course, it's not an interview that I did, but it is an interview, and we'll actually hear Lee Harvey Oswald talking before the time of the assassination. a two-hour interview with Colonel Fletcher Prouty, who was the liaison between the Pentagon and the CIA at the time of the assassination of the American president, and then, of course, my overall analysis of the reasons why President Kennedy was assassinated. There's so much information that has not been put out, and if you listen to this four-tape set, you will begin to understand that there are forces at work behind the scenes which have been able to confuse the American people about the reality of the murder of an American president. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, that's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, and ask for the JFK assassination tapes.
I said that M-word there, ladies and gentlemen. Yes, I did, and I'm just getting right down to the nitty-gritty of it all. It's a good thing for you to decide to send some of your money in here to support this radio. God has given you stewardship over the blessings that you have, and you're the one who prayerfully decides where that effort, where that result of your effort, I should say, goes. And God would be pleased, I think, if you decided to prayerfully come alongside Dr. Stan and others who have decided to help get the truth out about what's really going on here in the United States and in the world. You know, we're fighting a spiritual battle. It's clearly defined in the book of Ephesians in the New Testament in God's Word, the Bible. Look at it sometime there in chapter 6, I believe, of Ephesians. Read about what's going on. And then perhaps the Lord will speak to you as to what your role in this battle is. It may be that you should call 877-847-3443 and talk to whoever answers the phone out there and say that you'd like a copy of the Echologic magazine entitled Powerhouse. It's a great magazine. I'm a subscriber. I enjoy reading it as it comes in the mail, and it's very, very well done. That'll get you a start on understanding what Mr. Henry Lamb, our guest this afternoon, is doing to help you retain the freedoms that you're so used to. Once again, that number is 877-847-3443, or you can access his website at freedom.org. Henry, we talked about Howard Dean's solution is to just pull out, and George Bush's solution is to stay the course and bring a representative form of government, whatever that may be, in Iraq there. And I think that's probably the best plan. But there's a third thing, actually, number two, I guess. Most of the people who we see on the TV these days say that the UN is all-powerful and we should acquiesce to their will in this. And in fact, that's the solution to all of our problems here in the United States, is if we could just embrace the international court, the United Nations, and so forth and so on, there'd be peace and loveliness all around. I don't think you and I agree, though, do we?
Not on that point, we certainly don't. Turning to the UN, or turning Iraq over to the UN, is only slightly worse than just pulling out.
Right.
The United Nations has virtually no power were it not for the United States. If the United Nations had control over the Iraq situation, what that would mean is simply that we would be giving to the United Nations, the Security Council in particular, the power to dictate where our money and our troops would be deployed.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the only reason, the only difference. We do not need the United Nations to determine the future of Iraq, nor the future of the United States, nor the future of any other nation. The United Nations has its own agenda and its own plan for a global governance. And we certainly do not need to be supporting that agenda and that plan.
This is just the sort of situation that those in control of the United Nations just begin to salivate over, isn't it?
Oh, sure.
Because it's an opportunity for them to look good all the while spending United States taxpayers' money, and surely a little bit from some of the other places in the world. But, I mean, basically, the United States underwrites the cost of a great portion of the UN's stuff that's going on. They just love the idea that they will be given a mission there, and they could set up their bureaucracy, have committee meetings, and all kinds of things. There was something in one of the articles that you wrote where the United Nations was absolutely castigated by a member of the Iraqi government as to the fact that they had not been helping them in the last 35 years, and he didn't want them next year.
That's exactly right, and that's a wonderful speech made by the foreign minister of the new government over there directly to the Security Council, and that speech is on our website, incidentally. Mm-hmm. And he told them just exactly the way it is. Where have you been for the last 35 years while Saddam was over here slaughtering our people? Don't talk to me about helping us now.
Yeah, right. I think it's funny that one of the first things that Kofi Annan came out and said, and I quote, that the United Nations needs more clarity over what it would be asked to do in Iran before he could recommit to anything. That right there talks bureaucrat to me. Anytime we ask for more clarity, that means lots of dollars being spent, wonderful expense accounts being created there in New York and all the wonderful places to eat there, nice hotels, lots of meetings, and not anything being done that forwards the idea of true freedom here in this world.
What's happening, Dave, is because the United States went forward after trying to get the United Nations to do what it said it was going to do for 12 years and then chose not to do, the United States went forward and now has, the State Department says, some 60 nations supporting this effort one way or another, not significantly with troops and not even significantly with money, but to the extent that they can, they are helping, and more importantly, they have endorsed the concept of establishing representative government in Iraq. Now, what is happening is that the United States is moving forward with a new international coalition to do the things to implant the principles of freedom.
Mm-hmm.
That makes the United Nations very, very irrelevant. Why do we need them?
It scares the whatever out of them, and you could just kind of see them running around. I get so irritated whenever I see pictures of the United Nations building there and the diplomatic immunity and the fact that they've chosen New York City, one of the finest cities in the world, freedom, eating, nightclubs, all the stuff, you know what I'm
sure.
saying, as opposed to someplace else like, northern Scandinavia or something. Anyway, let's open up the program to telephone calls at 464-895-888-245-4237 and start off with Ron from Paso Robles. Hi, Ron. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Dave and Henry. How are you doing?
Hi, Ron.
I just want to make a few comments there. It seems to me that this war in Iraq was planned years ago, and all you have to do is look on the New American Century on the internet, and you'll see that it was planned by the intelligentsia in the government. Now, in my opinion, the three reasons why we're over there: oil, one; empower ourselves in the area, in other words, control the area; and to protect Israel. Now, what we need to do, and we haven't done it, is to mind our own business. Now, you might think, well, we got rid of a brutal dictator, which is true, but there are dictators all over the world, maybe more brutal than this guy was. Now, if anybody thinks that this war is worth it, they ought to ask the people that lost their loved ones over there. And just today, a helicopter went down killing 9 soldiers. So all we've done is created hatred for us around the world. The only real ally we have is Israel at the present time.
What do you think of those things, Henry? And I'll let Ron take his answer off the air there. His point was that it's for oil, self-aggrandizement, or, bizarrely, for the state of Israel.
Ron represents a feeling, an opinion, a thought that is shared by many Americans, particularly those on the right side of the political spectrum. I would agree with only one point that Ron made. It is certainly, our presence in Iraq is certainly to strengthen the defenses for Israel. You know, in the 90 and 91 Persian Gulf War, Saddam set Scud missiles in the middle of Tel Aviv, mm-hmm. and would do it any time that he could. So Ron is right on that point. The idea that we are there for oil is pretty much nonsense. The oil that Iraq has was available to us without invasion. It is available to us now at precisely the same price that it was before the invasion. Oil has nothing to do with our involvement there. We need no additional aggrandizement. We are already seen to be, by every country in the world, the leader economically and politically. So there is nothing to be gained by going to war there or anywhere else. But his point that we need to mind our own business is a point that I would agree with as well. But I would say that when we are attacked on our soil and 3,000 of our people are killed by people who hate us, it is our business to go find them. And Saddam Hussein is simply one of those people. Muammar Gaddafi is another of those people. And you see, once we took a stand and used power, which is the only thing these folks understand, Muammar Gaddafi changed his mind after 30 years. We are seeing the other tyrants around the world taking notice. If we back off, it will embolden and empower them. If we finish what we start, we may well need to take down additional tyrants in this world that harbor terrorism. But it is our business.
That's one of the things I wanted to ask you, Henry, is how what do you see as being the finish of this business? When do we know when we're through fighting a war on terrorism, or is that something that's never going to happen as long as man is here on Earth?
Well, there has always been war, and I would say that the people who have lost loved ones in Iraq who question whether or not it is worth it are probably in precisely the same people who lost loved ones in the Second World War, wondering whether it was worth it. But in hindsight, who would say that we should not have gone to war with Japan or with Germany?
Mm-hmm.
It is an unfortunate reality of life that we must die, and there is no more important cause for which to die than our national freedom.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree with you more. I'm a Vietnam veteran, as you may know. I think some of the people realize that I was over there in 1965 flying around in F-4s and saw a lot of interesting things going on in that war, which was not supported. And I can always give a personal aside as to the reaction I had when I came back. My service was denigrated. I was one of those people who was actually spit upon in the San Francisco International Airport coming back from that whole thing. And it was not a good thing. But while we were there, the men who served, it wasn't men and women at that time, but the men who were serving in the tactical fighter squadrons, who were doing the will of the government, shall we say, had a good esprit de corps. We, as people of the United States now, need to be sure that the esprit de corps does not go downhill anymore. And I think probably a lot of the media are being good in that sense. We're not getting the bad press as much as we did in Vietnam, wouldn't you say?
Oh, I would say very definitely so.
I wish we had had that back in 65 when I was over there. I would have felt a whole lot better about getting shot at. There's one thing that I try to express to my children who are grown now but somewhat into video games and things, and I don't mean to sound heroic at all, but there's something about somebody shooting at you meaning to shoot you that changes your way of looking at life.
Oh, yes.
And I've had that experience. I don't want to do it again. I don't recommend it for anyone. But sometimes, as an arm of a government whose goal is to protect the freedom and liberty of those of us who live here, some people have to stand out, stand up, and do the work that is required.
Exactly.
We want to talk a little bit about what you think. Well, the UN is not a powerful organization. I mean, they get a lot of good press. They spend a lot of money. Realistically, their role in the future, Henry, where do you think they're going? Do you think it's going to continue, or is this new coalition of nations, maybe the Economic Union or something like that, going to take over?
I think that will be determined to a very large extent by the outcome of this election this year. If George Bush returns for another 4 years, then we are likely to continue on the same road to build relationships outside the UN.
Mm-hmm.
The UN will be faltering and to try to find a role for itself, to try to retain its relevance, but it has failed in so many of its initiatives. Mogadishu is a classic example of why the UN should not be involved in any kind of military operation. It has failed in many of its social improvement projects, wasting billions and billions of dollars with initiatives that can be better handled through a free market and voluntary exchange of a kind of program. And there are better ways to achieve peace in this world than to try to create a global institution that enforces peace.
Mm-hmm. And yet they're progressing somewhat with the International Court, with their pressure on countries to sign things like Kyoto and all the inherent bad press that the United States gets for standing up against such an economic thing. And I purposefully say that because it certainly has nothing to do with the environment.
Well, that's right. But again, that's the only reason that Kyoto is not enforced today is because of the election 4 years ago in mm-hmm. 2000. Had Al Gore been elected, the Kyoto Protocol would be enforced worldwide. If the Democrats retake the White House this year, you can look for a resurgence of the Kyoto Protocol. So it is crucial this year that we continue in the direction that we started in the year 2000, and we have only taken a few baby steps. Now, I am not an apologist for George Bush. There are many policies that he has embraced that I really wish he would not, that I cannot support. But on the other hand, he has done some things, like withdrawal from the Kyoto Protocol and many others, that would not have happened had we elected Al Gore in 2000.
Yeah, it's a scary thing for me, frankly, to think about what would have happened had President Bush not been declared the winner there. Let's talk to Jeannie just a second. Hi, Jeannie. How are you this afternoon?
Well, hi, Dave. It's nice hearing your voice again.
Thank you so much.
Nice and cheery. Well, I've been a fan of Henry's, and I'm certainly disappointed in his thoughts on the war that's over in Iraq. One point is when our soldiers die, they send them back in military tubes. And these are tubes that they're not coffins, and they're not displayed, and they're hid from the media. And that infuriates me. And so, Henry, what do you think about that?
Well, Jeannie, I don't know about that. I don't know how they return the bodies. And, you know, that may be something that could be done better or different. But I think it is an extremely minor part of the war in Iraq and the war against terrorism.
Well, I don't think it's minor. For if your son went to war and he died and he came back in a tube and there were no services, I don't think that's minor at all, Henry.
Well, Gene, I don't know that that what you're saying applies to everybody that comes back. I have seen military services from people who have come back, but I don't know how widespread that is.
I would encourage the listeners to go to a website, and that's www.joelskousen.com. And he's very credible in intelligence, and he especially knows about Central America and South America, which I frequent a lot, and he is right on the money. So, Henry, I'm disappointed in your view on this, and that's all I have to say.
I appreciate your calling, Jeannie. It's always good to hear your voice, and we're going to take a break right now. We'll be back with the last few minutes of Henry Lamb and our conversation about the UN, about what's going on in Iraq, and now an added dimension of whether or not we're actually being truthful about what's going on as our gloriously wounded and dead people are coming back here. That's not the right way to say it. I don't mean to say it that way. Let's go to a break, and we'll get right back.
The Anglo-American establishment gives you the documentation for Professor Quigley's allegation that there was a secret society created in England that ultimately came to dominate England and ultimately came to dominate the United States of America. The Anglo-American establishment will give you the books that you can read, written by men who were actually involved in the original secret society. Professor Quigley opens his book saying that most people have heard of the Rhodes Scholarships, and most people, a few people, have actually heard that Cecil Rhodes wrote a confession of faith, which was attached to his first five wills, talking about the formation of a secret society. But what almost no one in America realizes today is that that secret society was actually formed and still exists to this very day. The Anglo-American Establishment by Professor Quigley, Volcker and his mentor, is one of the most important books you'll ever read, and available by calling 1-800-5-HIV-WART.
For the next 6 minutes or so, we're going to be talking with Henry Lamb on this Thursday's edition of Radio Liberty. Continue to pray for all of us who are working here today while Dr. Stan is away. Pray for him, too, as he adheres to what he's set about for himself as the Lord tarries. And if you keep Radio Liberty in your prayers, we will thank you very much for our provision and for providing the things that we need here. Jeannie's call was disturbing to me, Henry, because when she the words that she used, returning our honored dead back in tubes, caught me by surprise. Now, that is a word that is not or a phrase, not a very good way to describe what's happening, and I don't know. It's true that it has not been on TV. The media has not made a show of that, but there are memorial services for these men and women, I'm absolutely sure.
Well, that's the first time I have heard that particular description of people being returned. I have no reason to believe that our returning dead are not treated in as dignified and honorable a way as possible. What that way is, I don't know.
Yeah, I have to agree with you there, and I'm absolutely sure that the government is treating with dignity those who are returning. You know, that's bothersome to me, but I want to move on to one short point before we move away altogether for this program for the afternoon. A lot of what is going on in the world today, the war on terror, is rightly a war on fanatic Islam.
Yes.
And what do you think is going to happen to Islam as a world power in, say, the next 10 years?
Well, I think it will undergo some changing. The fundamentalist wing of the Islamist, or of Islam, has been gaining strength in the Islamic world. I think that strength is now threatened rather severely by the events since 9/11. And I think that the rest of Islam, I hope that the rest of Islam comes on board to help defeat and eradicate this extreme fundamentalist bin Laden philosophy.
Mm-hmm. Outside of Indonesia, there's only one country, and that's Turkey. That is an Islamic nation that has embraced certain principles of the democratic, if you will, way of life. What do you see as happening there?
Well, I think that will continue to exude influence on other Islamic nations. We see in Iran this conflict that has been rising there for the last several years. And I think that we are about to see some significant changes in Iran and other Islamic countries.
So your prognostication in the next 60 seconds, if you will, sir, as to what's going to happen in the year 2004, and more importantly, what's our responsibility?
Well, our responsibility is to advance the principles of freedom every way that we can. I regret that there are people who are disappointed in me because of my interpretation of my responsibilities to advance the principles of freedom, but I would encourage everyone to work as hard as they can to see that all people everywhere get to enjoy the benefits of freedom that God has given to us.
Amen to that, and I thank you very much for spending an hour of your time with us, Henry. I hope that everything is going well with you. I look forward to the next edition of Powerhouse. Let me give that number one more time, 877-847-3443. You can get a free complimentary issue. Also, freedom.org is the website. Mr. Henry Lamb, thank you, and God bless you.
Thank you, Dave.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
A friend of this program, many, many times, Henry Lamb has appeared here and always has a pretty straight thought about what's going on in the world today, as well as presenting issues on his website with factual documentation. Joel Skousen, too, as Jeannie brought up, is certainly someone to investigate as you peruse what's going on to find out more detailed things. I don't know about his intelligence background. I have talked to Joel before, but I encourage you to go there, too, joelskousen.com. That's spelled S-K-O-U-S-E-N. And right here, I would like to encourage you to continue praying for Dr. Stan and me and all the other guys and gals who work here at Radio Liberty trying to bring the truth out. Tomorrow, we're going to have Michael Kaufman as our guest talking about property rights. And that's a fundamental thing here in these United States, a thing which is being slowly and with increasing fervor taken away from us in terms of our need to buy permits and have inspections and all this other stuff that the government is beginning to intrude upon ourselves, taking our land away, just flat taking it away. That's what's going on, and we're going to be talking about it with Michael tomorrow. The number to call, 800-544-8927, if you decide that you'd like to become a member of the Radio Liberty family of supporters. It's so important that we see hundreds of you joining the hundreds already lined up, supporting, underwriting the cost of putting this program on the air. This kind of talk radio is important to you. Call 800-544-8927. Continue, I pray, to pray for Radio Liberty, all of the individuals up here, but most importantly, pray for our president, those in leadership, pray for your country, and pray that God will reveal to you what part of the battle is yours. So long, everybody.
America, my